This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Eat for the Planet, Saving the World, One Bite at a Time. Written by Neil Zacharias and Gene Stone. Performed by Brian Troxell.
Visual aids found in the print edition of this book are available to you as a downloadable PDF. To access this file, please click the link on the product page where you purchased this title. Thank you.
Introduction. If you picked up this audiobook, you're probably someone who cares about the environment. You recycle your household goods. You hesitate before taking that next plane trip because of its carbon footprint. You ride a bike, walk, or use public transportation whenever possible rather than hopping into your car. You never litter. You refill your favorite water bottle from the tap. You go paperless whenever you can. You join marches. You sign petitions. You vote for politicians based on their green credentials. You've even looked into how to make your animal companion more ecologically sound. Reusable bags, checking labels, using eco-friendly accessories. But look closer. Are you really so eco-friendly after all? Even as you listen to this, you're thinking about that cheeseburger you're going to eat tonight. Yesterday you had a steak. This morning you had bacon and eggs. Setting aside the health issues these raise for you, have you stopped to consider how your food choices affect the health of the Earth? It's unlikely you have, because if you were thinking about the Earth, you would think twice before eating that cheeseburger, that steak, those eggs and bacon, not to mention that milkshake, that clam chowder, that hot dog, and that spaghetti bolognese from the weekend. Seriously, you ask? Yes. Seriously. Imagine for a moment that you're on a journey, and you're taking what appears to be the most direct road to an intended destination. You look around and notice that everyone else seems to be on the same road. There's nothing more comforting. It's the road that seems to make the most sense. It's tried and tested, and people have been on it for years, knowing that it will lead them directly toward their destinations, wherever they may be, in the safest and most efficient way possible. What if we told you that you're already on such a road? In fact, a majority of the world's population has been traveling with you on this road for at least a century. But what if we also told you that this road is veering precariously toward the edge of a cliff? And if you, and everyone else on that road, don't realize it, you are all imperiling your future. What is this road you're on? The road is our industrialized food system, dominated by animal agriculture. And as we amble down that road, we may be feeding ourselves, but we're also feeding our extinction. Forget about science fiction scenarios like aliens showing up and fighting humans for control of the Earth. The real battle for the future of our planet, and the future of the human race, is being fought on your plates, multiple times a day, with every food choice you make. Okay. Does this sound like we're being overly dramatic? Is this a well-meaning argument that falls apart upon analysis? Nope, it is not. Industrial animal agriculture is at the heart of the biggest problem of our time, our environmental crisis. And this audiobook will show you exactly why, if you care about the environment, if you care for your planet, you need to change the way you eat. 99% of meat, dairy and eggs available in the United States come from the industrial animal agriculture system, or from factory farms. By eating those foods, you are doing as much, if not more, harm to the environment as if you didn't recycle, take a plane, drive your car, or find a way to make your dog your ecological statement. But, you say, if that were true, wouldn't someone have already told you this? Maybe they have. But maybe you haven't grasped the severity of the predicament we're in. The evolution of our road to ruin. First, how did we get here? The Earth is 4.5 billion years old, and modern humans have been on the planet for about 200,000 years or so. From an ecological standpoint, things on planet Earth were relatively stable with humans in the mix for thousands of years. But that has changed drastically in the last 200 years. The two big factors that triggered this change are the exponential growth of the human population coupled with the rapid rise of new technology. Think about this fact for a moment. It took nearly 200,000 years for the human population to reach 1 billion, and only 200 more years to swell to 7.5 billion. In that time period, technology evolved as well, and hand-driven methods of extracting resources from the Earth were replaced with machine-driven methods. This is true across a wide range of industries, from textile manufacturing to coal mining. This shift from humans coexisting with nature and using rudimentary tools to exerting complete control over the natural world and using complex machines sent us down an inevitable yet dangerous path. For example, we've gone from fire and axes, which were some of the earliest technologies used to clear forest for farming, to multifunctional forest-eliminating machines that fell, delimb, and stack trees for transport. When humankind began to extract resources from our environment using technology, we had little notion of its effects on planetary ecosystems, and, in turn, humanity. So we forged ahead with the goal of improving the quality of human life in the short term without thinking, or knowing, about long-term consequences. We also find ourselves with a global economic system that is dependent upon immediate rewards rather than long-term goals. This means efforts to create profits often result in a disregard for the environment. However, we can only keep tugging at the threads of our ecological tapestry for so long before it finally starts to show signs of coming unraveled. That's where we find ourselves in the 21st century. But what does your diet have to do with this, you might ask? Well, everything. Agriculture has been completely transformed in the past 200 years. Humankind decided it would be a great idea to turn farms into factories with one simple goal: to produce massive quantities of meat, eggs, and milk at the lowest possible cost. As the world's population ballooned, factory farming rapidly emerged to feed it. Global meat production has increased more than fivefold since 1950, and large-scale intensive livestock products have started to spread to the developing world to meet the rising demand for cheap meat and other animal products, due to factory farming becoming increasingly globalized. Additionally, thanks to government subsidies that encourage overproduction, particularly in America and Western Europe, meat has become cheaper over the years, but all this progress has come with a significant cost to the planet, and to us. You won't hear much about it in the news, but industrial animal agriculture currently occupies more than half of the world's arable land resources, uses the majority of our freshwater stores, and expels more greenhouse gas emissions than the entire transportation sector. Additionally, it causes rampant air and water pollution, land degradation, and deforestation, and is pushing countless species to the brink of extinction. As the world's population is expected to grow to 9.8 billion by 2050, today's version of animal agriculture will likely push our planet's finite resources to their furthest limits. To make matters worse, the growing demand for meat, eggs, and dairy, particularly in countries like China and India, is adding pressure on our current inefficient and unsustainable global food system. If we don't change course very soon, we won't be able to produce enough food for all these new people without degrading land, water, biodiversity, and the climate on a global scale. We're basically heading toward a future of potential food, energy, and water shortages, as well as complete ecosystem collapse. That is, unless we all get off the road we've been traveling on and find a safer, more environmentally friendly path. It has become appallingly obvious that our technology has exceeded our humanity. Albert Einstein. Chapter 1. This land was made for you and me, and animals too. Issues of land. The majority of the world's arable land is dedicated to livestock and their feed. How good are you at geography? Don't worry, no matter what you think the world looks like, you're probably not imagining it like the world we're about to describe. That's because the system we depend upon to feed our human population is largely invisible to the people who benefit most from it. Say hello to the new planet Earth. 71% of our planet is covered with water, but you probably knew that already. What you didn't know is that nearly half of the land that composes the rest of this beautiful planet consists of farm animals and crops that feed these animals. And what you're about to learn is that this system of agriculture isn't just destroying our planetary ecosystems, it is changing the face of the planet itself. If you really want to understand how the planet Earth came to look like this, all you need to know is that it takes 160 times more land resources to produce beef than it does to produce vegetables, fruits, and legumes. But that's not where the story ends. Even chickens, pigs, dairy cows, and the other farm animals that make up our current farming system require a lot of space. After all, the livestock population is made up of more than 20 billion animals, including an unbelievable 19 billion chickens, while the human population is 7.5 billion. When you take this into account, it's not really surprising that the entire livestock system currently occupies 45% of the planet's land surface. In comparison, 95% of the human population occupies 10% of the world's land. Four unusual ways industrial animal agriculture contributes to climate change. 1. Livestock respiration. Just like humans, livestock breathe in oxygen and breathe out carbon dioxide. This may not seem significant, but consider that there are approximately 20 billion plus farm animals living and breathing at any moment worldwide. A World Watch Institute report noted that a molecule of CO2 exhaled by livestock is no more natural than one from an auto tailpipe. Today, tens of billions more livestock are exhaling CO2 than in pre-industrial days. 2. Burps and farts. Cows, goats, and sheep are ruminants, which means they have to regurgitate and rechew their food several times. This requires massive amounts of bacteria, which create a byproduct called methane, a greenhouse gas 23 times more potent than CO2. A 2008 study found that the U.S. creates 49 million tons of methane every year, mostly from livestock. At the rate that meat and dairy consumption is increasing, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations estimates that methane emissions could increase 60% by 2030. 3. Manure. The 2.7 trillion pounds of manure produced by farm animals in the U.S. is teeming with nitrous oxide, N2O, a greenhouse gas 296 times more warming than CO2, and which lingers in the atmosphere for 150 years. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization calculates that 65% of N2O emissions are the result of livestock activities. Most N2O comes from the production of livestock feed, as well as managing livestock waste with nitrogen-based fertilizers. 4. Transportation. The billions of farm animals raised and killed each year need to be transported by trucks from farms to slaughterhouses to grocery stores. When combined with all other sources of animal agriculture greenhouse gas emissions, the World Watch Institute estimates that the livestock sector is responsible for 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gases. How our appetite for meat transformed our global map. As the human appetite for meat, dairy, and eggs increased over the years, so did our dependence on an industrialized farming system that has livestock as its core commodity. One obvious drawback of relying on a system comprised of billions of living beings to feed our population is that those animals need to be fed as well. Additionally, raising livestock is not a short-term commitment, as most farming requires animals to be raised over months or years before they are ready to be slaughtered for meat. Or, alternatively, animals that are raised to produce milk or eggs must be kept alive for much longer. This requires a tremendous amount of livestock feed, resulting in 33% of arable land on the planet being used for its production. Thus began our quest to find more pasture land to increase agricultural output. Feed producers resorted to creating pastures out of grasslands and woodlands, and our forests paid the price. As of 2012, there were around 800 million acres of forest in the U.S. Currently, 260 million acres, and counting, of U.S. forests have been clear-cut to create land used to produce livestock feed, and 80% of the deforestation in the Amazon rainforest is attributed to beef production. So, what do we get out of this deal? At the cost of 1 acre of land, we get a yield of 250 pounds of beef. Sounds like a lot, considering you can get around 1,000 quarter-pound hamburger patties per acre. However, the same amount of land can produce 50,000 pounds of tomatoes, up to 40,000 pounds of potatoes, 30,000 pounds of carrots, or 20,000 pounds of apples. It no longer seems like such a great use of space, does it? We're sacrificing trees to make more space for farm animals. While humans might not seem to rely on trees for shelter and food in the same manner that wild animals do, our survival hinges on the health of the forests just as much as any other animals. Trees play a vital role in balancing and maintaining the world's ecosystems. When the trees go, we lose a lot more than wood. Forests absorb massive amounts of carbon dioxide and may well be our best defense against climate change-causing greenhouse gas emissions. By clearing forest areas, we are not only cutting down our defenses, but also releasing all of the carbon stored by those trees back into the atmosphere. To make matters worse, we're replacing the forests with the industrial livestock system, which further exacerbates the impact on surrounding ecosystems and releases more greenhouse gases. How? Because of respiratory and digestive emissions from livestock and manure management, producing feed for livestock, as well as processing and transporting the end products, which we'll cover in more detail in Chapter 4. What could happen if we keep eating this way? In order to sustain the 9.8 billion people who are predicted to inhabit the Earth by 2050, the amount of land designated for food production will need to increase significantly. Come 2050, there's just not going to be enough land to contain and support the human population, our food, and our food's food. In fact, to have any hope of feeding our population, we'll need 50% more land. As we attempt to create more pasture land, we will continue to destroy what's left of our forests. In addition, we will try to squeeze more output out of arable land using fertilizers, herbicides, and pesticides until the fertile soil we rely on to grow food is completely devoid of any nutrients. This nutrient-deficient dry soil will erode, with all the chemicals embedded in it flowing with the runoff water into neighboring rivers and lakes. Thanks to toxic chemicals, not only will aquatic life in these water systems stand very little chance of survival, but the wildlife that depends on that clean water will also suffer. But plants and animals are not the only ones who will pay the price. Eventually, violent conflicts will erupt over control of the remaining land capable of producing fresh food, as well as the distribution of such food. Food shortages and, ultimately, a global hunger crisis will cause these conflicts to eventually escalate into all-out global war and mass migration, as countries grapple with the challenge of feeding their growing, yet starving, populations. What could happen if we hashtag eat for the planet? If the world's population decided to change the way it eats starting today, we could make a tremendous impact. By simply replacing our consumption of industrial meat with plant-based foods, a Dutch study predicts that roughly 10.4 million square miles, an area about the size of Africa, of grazing land would be immediately available, as well as 386,000 square miles of land that are currently being used to grow crops for livestock. This land could then be converted back into grasslands and forests by planting trees and with habitat restoration efforts, thereby helping balance carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere and slowing down the pace of climate change. However, returning the land lost to grazing and food production will be just the starting point. by ceasing to be reliant upon industrial animal agriculture to produce meat, dairy, and other animal products, we can also free up agricultural land that is currently occupied by vast factories that confine hundreds of thousands of animals. As the world changes the way it eats, the liberation of land from the clutches of the industrial livestock system will eventually help radically transform our planet. And as the human population grows, we will be able to produce enough healthy, nutritious food for everyone, while helping to restore our failing ecosystems. Chapter 2, H2, Uh-Oh, Issues of Water. Our global freshwater supplies are being used to grow livestock feed, hydrate animals, and clean up their messes. There is a very good reason that the old adage goes, water is life. Every living organism on Earth requires water at some point in its life. The world's 7.5 billion people would not be able to survive without it. 71% of the Earth's surface is water, but humans and all the other species that require fresh water to live are being hit with the harsh reality that fresh water is indeed a finite resource, and we're running out of it. Only about 2.5% of water on the planet's surface is fresh, and just about 1% of that fresh water is readily accessible for human consumption, i.e., only 0.3% of all water. The rest is locked up in glaciers and snowfields. And here's where things get even stickier. Although we think of drinking water and personal hygiene as the main uses for fresh water, it's also the linchpin of successful agriculture. Water means life largely because water means the ability to grow food. Knowing this, and knowing that our population is continually increasing, it might seem obvious that we should work hard to make the most efficient use of water in agriculture. Unfortunately, that's not the current state of affairs. Livestock is the largest beneficiary of our scarce freshwater supplies, because in order to produce meat and dairy, we need to grow a great deal of food to feed our food. And the system that's been passed down and industrialized over recent generations wastes a whole lot of that water. The hidden water in meat. Let's start with a close look at the relationship between meat and water. Every hamburger, chicken nugget, and slab of pork starts with the same basic ingredients, corn and soy. In 2016, around 4.6 billion animals were raised and slaughtered for meat in the United States alone. The only way to keep all these animals fed while keeping the price for consumers low is to feed them cheap food that fattens them up as soon as possible. Enter corn and soybeans. In the U.S., 47% of soy and 60% of corn is consumed by livestock. These crops require a great deal of water to grow. It takes about 147 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of corn, and 220 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of soy. An average cow will consume around 1,000 pounds of feed every few months until it reaches slaughter weight, which takes between 2 and 3 years. Within a short lifetime, that cow will use about 183,500 gallons of water through feed alone. That is an exorbitant amount of water for one animal. But, as they say, it ain't over till it's over. A cow's water footprint doesn't end with feed. Millions more gallons per animal are required for everything from hydration to washing excrement off concrete floors, cleaning blood and grease from the equipment in the butchering process, etc. Refer to the downloadable PDF. When all is said and done, it takes about 1,800 gallons of water on average to produce 1 pound of meat. To put that into context, the average swimming pool contains 22,500 gallons of water. So you could use the water needed to produce just 12.5 pounds of meat to fill an entire pool. All in all, meat is a thirsty business. 15 things you could do with 1,800 gallons of water instead of producing a pound of meat. 1. Take 26 showers. 2. Do 40 loads of laundry. 3. Do 120 loads of dishes in a dishwasher. 4. Flush your toilet 1,125 times. 5. Produce 7 pounds of tofu. 6. Grow 12 pounds of avocados. 7. Grow 53 pounds of potatoes. 8. Grow 13 pounds of wheat. 9. Grow 21 pounds of apples. 10. Grow 4.5 pounds of rice. 11. Produce 11 bottles of wine. 12. Produce 5 bottles of whiskey. 13. Produce 40 pints of beer. 14. Manufacture 7 iPhones. 15. Manufacture 1 laptop. The hidden water in dairy. Speaking of thirsty, let's turn our sights to the dairy industry to see how much water is hidden there as well. Just as in the case of meat production, most of the water needed to produce dairy comes from manufacturing feed. In fact, 98% of milk's water footprint can be traced back to a cow's food, and dairy cows eat a lot. The preferred food for dairy cows is alfalfa, as cows efficiently use its high levels of protein, calcium, and high-quality fiber to produce milk. As you might imagine, constantly producing milk, the average dairy cow produces 6 to 7 gallons daily, puts a huge strain on the metabolism of dairy cows, and they need to replenish that energy through their food. Like corn and soy, alfalfa is a water-intensive crop. Producing 1 pound requires around 114 gallons of water. This is a better water-to-feed ratio than corn or soy, but dairy cows need around 6 pounds of alfalfa to produce 1 gallon of milk. If a dairy cow is producing 7 gallons of milk a day, that totals out to 4,788 gallons of water per cow per day. At the risk of sounding redundant, food is only one part of a dairy cow's water footprint. Cows also drink around 23 gallons of water a day just to stay hydrated. For context, a well-hydrated person drinks about 1 gallon of water daily. This means you can tack on an additional 10,925 gallons of water to the aforementioned dairy farm's water footprint. Now that we've handled food and water, let's talk sanitation. Milk and cheese production is a messy endeavor. The average mid-sized dairy factory farm houses between 200 and 700 cows, all of which have to crowd into a milking parlor multiple times a day. Between the excrement produced by these animals and the literal spilled milk, keeping a parlor floor clean requires a huge amount of water. Most farms have automated flushing systems that use an average of 150 gallons of water per cow per day. In total, a farm with 475 cows could use 71,250 gallons per day on flushing systems alone. All things considered, by the time that gallon of milk makes it to your refrigerator, around the same amount of water that you use for a whole month's worth of showers, about 2,000 gallons, has been used in its creation. So if you're looking to conserve water, you may want to reconsider your weekly gallon of milk. We can't supersize freshwater supplies. What does all this mean in terms of an individual's water footprint? An estimated 4,200 gallons of water per day is required to produce the average diet that contains meat and dairy. According to the United States Environmental Protection Agency, an average family of 4 uses about 400 gallons of water a day for various indoor activities, including taking showers, washing dishes, doing laundry, and flushing the toilet. This statistic, however, doesn't take into consideration how our food consumption affects our water footprint. If each member of this hypothetical family of 4 ate a cheeseburger for dinner, that household's daily water consumption would shoot up to over 7,000 gallons, depending on the size of the burgers, the amount of cheese, etc. In 1 year, the average American consumes roughly 58 pounds of beef, 50 pounds of pork, and 91 pounds of chicken. The water that it takes to produce just a pound of each one of these meats is approximately 1,800 gallons, 576 gallons, and 468 gallons, respectively. To put this into perspective, it only takes 119 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of potatoes. Simply stated, if we used all of this water to produce food for direct human consumption, rather than the roundabout process of industrial meat farming, we would have a lot more food and a whole lot more water to go around. About 800 million people worldwide currently lack access to clean water, and a total of 2.7 billion people find water scarce for at least 1 month of the year. By 2025, two-thirds of the world's population may face water shortages, and climate change will only exacerbate the problem as it alters rainfall patterns. And all the while, we have that water, and we are using it for burgers. What could happen if we keep eating this way? Drought will no longer be considered a temporary emergency if we do not change our eating habits. It will instead become the universal norm. By 2025, over half of the world's population will face water shortages. By 2050, up to 75% of people will be in a state of water scarcity. Taps will run dry. Reservoirs will be a luxury of the past. We'll have drilled so deep into the Earth's bedrock to retrieve ancient water stores that the sinkholes we're seeing in Florida today will seem like small puddles. Due to extreme water shortages, all supplies will become privatized, and fresh water will no longer be a human right. It will be a commodity valued more highly than gold. Many people found it absurd when restaurants in California stopped giving customers tap water unless they specifically requested it. But in the future, people may find the idea strange that we once told children to turn off the faucet when brushing their teeth, because at some point, it will no longer be guaranteed that when a tap is turned on, water will even appear. Not only will domestic water supplies be reduced to near zero, in some areas, local waterways and lakes will all but disappear. This will not bode well for the weather system, as there will be no restorative rains if there is nothing to evaporate into the atmosphere. Clouds will be replaced with relentlessly blue skies, and future generations will know nothing of rainstorms or puddles. Moreover, the plethora of freshwater marine life we know and love today will cease to exist. If we're lucky, desalinization of ocean water will be able to make up for the lack of potable water, for those who can afford it. After all, there won't be any short supply of ocean water if the ice caps have all melted. What could happen if we hashtag eat for the planet? Let's say you wanted to go all out and avoid animal products like meat, eggs, cheese, and milk, and instead choose a plant-based diet for just 1 day. By doing so, your diet would require 1,500 fewer gallons of water, which is enough to meet the daily indoor needs of approximately 15 people in the United States. Now, imagine if the entire planet made such a small yet meaningful shift away from animal-based foods. We might finally be able to give ourselves a fighting chance of combating global water shortages. This shift has the potential to have a profound impact on our planet. First, some of the water that's currently being funneled into the livestock system would be repurposed for more useful activities that promote human health and well-being, including making water available to the 1 in 9 people around the world who currently lack access to safe drinking water. This will help slow down the rate at which we're draining our freshwater stores. Life in our rivers and lakes will recuperate, and so will wildlife surrounding these bodies of water. This change, coupled with the other downstream impacts of revamping our agricultural system, such as reduced pollution and dead zone relief, will help restore the much-needed balance in our world's ecosystems and give our growing population hope for survival. Chapter 3. Grain Drain. Issues of Food. Allocating viable crops to livestock instead of humans leaves the world hungry. Considering all the progress we have made over the past 200 years in our methods of cultivating crops and rearing livestock, using machines and computer technology, we ought to be yielding some impressive results in food production. In other words, shouldn't we be pretty good at feeding the world's population by now? Well, we're not. So what's going on here? 20,000 plant species are known to be edible. However, fewer than 20 species now provide 90% of our food, and only three crops, rice, maize, and wheat, contribute nearly 60% of the calories and proteins obtained by humans from plants. In general, around 75% of the world's food is generated from only 12 plants and 5 animal species. However, a significant portion of the calories from our staple crops are used to feed animals. When it comes to the question of who is eating the world's grain, the answer is clear. 55% of crops are directly eaten by people, while 36% go to livestock. On top of that, around 9% are turned into biofuels and industrial products. When it comes to corn, these animals get between 40 and 50% of the annual crop yield. These animals are fed grains because it facilitates rapid weight gain, readying them for slaughter more quickly. So while we are doing an excellent job ensuring that our farm animals are fed sufficient quantities of grain to fatten them up, nearly 21,000 people die of hunger or hunger-related causes every day. The root cause of these fatalities isn't a shortage of food, but rather our dependence on an unbalanced food system that is draining our natural resources to cater to the needs and tastes of only a part of the global population. Five reasons why governments around the world decided that growing feed for livestock was more important than feeding hungry people. 1. You can feed farm animals bad food. People ask questions. Cows, pigs, and chickens don't. They don't wonder where their food comes from and willingly consume cheap corn and soy that is genetically modified, sprayed with pesticides, and designed to make them overweight and sick. 2. Monocultures are just easier. Why bother growing a diverse array of crops when you can just focus on essential commodity crops like corn and soy to make up more than half of the farmland in the United States? Just keep it simple, stupid. 80% of the global soybean crop and 40 to 50% of the annual corn crop are fed to cattle, pigs, chickens, and other animals used in agriculture. And we don't hear them complaining. 3. The bigger the factory farm, the more money to be made. Eating fruits and vegetables may be great for people, and in fact recommended by health experts. But let's get real. Where's the fun in salad? And by fun, we mean money. Mega farms have mega money, and they don't grow fruits and vegetables, so why bother funneling tax dollars in the form of subsidies for healthy crops when you can help the rich get richer? And what are the rich great at? Coughing up millions in political campaign contributions when election time comes around. Small farmers, the health of the public, and common sense be damned. This is just easy. Notice a trend? 4. The razor and razor blade strategy. Duh. When you get farmers to grow just one or two crops on the same land and get the entire animal agriculture industry to rely on it, farmers end up with a razor that needs a steady supply of razor blades to be of any use. In farming terms, they have to rely heavily on chemicals, namely synthetic fertilizers, because growing the same plant on the same land year after year rapidly depletes the nutrients in the soil. In addition, you need pesticides to control weed and insect populations. And it should come as no surprise that 6 giant corporations dominate the world's seed and agrochemical industries. You catch our drift. Easy money. 5. An appetite for meat keeps the global economy booming. The bottom line is, it's a win-win strategy for all. People in the Western world and the rising middle class in the developing world get to spend their money eating foods that make them happy. Meat and cheese. And they get to buy it for a price that's cheaper than boring salads. As the junk food industry, big meat, egg, and dairy producers, as well as the giant agrochemical and biotech companies get richer, their favorite politicians get elected into office, who in turn continue to develop policies that keep this cycle going. Most importantly, the global economy flourishes. What are the long-term consequences on human health and the environment? Hey, who has the time to think about that when we have all this great food to eat? In the case of industrial animal agriculture, you get much less than you give. Although crops used for animal feed are ultimately converted into human food in the form of meat, eggs, and dairy products, this is done with a substantial loss of caloric efficiency. A great deal of wastage occurs in the process of turning these crops into animal foods, and only a fraction of the calories in feed given to livestock make their way into the meat, milk, and eggs that we consume. For every 100 calories of grain fed to animals, we get only about 40 new calories of milk, 22 calories of eggs, 12 of chicken, 10 of pork, or 3 of beef. Simply put, meat, dairy, and eggs are extremely inefficient ways of feeding the human population. The world's beef-producing cattle require a quantity of food equal to the caloric needs of 8.7 billion people, which is more than the entire planet's human population. We can feed the world, we just need to want to. Global hunger is a problem we actually have the power to end within a few years. The solution is one in which each of us, especially those in the Western world, can play an integral part. By shifting our diet away from animal-based foods and incorporating more foods derived from plant-based sources, we could allow the world to directly consume more of the calories produced from farming on existing cropland. We could make around 70% more calories available, potentially providing enough calories to feed an additional 4 billion people, just by targeting all crop production currently used for animal feed and other non-food uses, including biofuels, for direct consumption. While that's easier said than done, imagine if we could shift even half of it. We could easily grow enough food to feed everyone sustainably. 8 reasons plants make you healthy. A diet rich in plants will dramatically increase your intake of many important macro and micronutrients. These include 1. Fiber. A plant-based diet is naturally high in fiber, which means a healthier colon and digestive tract. 2. Antioxidants. Antioxidants guard against cell damage, and unlike animal-based foods, plant foods are filled with them. 3. Vitamin C. It abounds in fruits and vegetables and will boost your immune system and, new research finds, possibly your cardiovascular health. 4. Magnesium. Magnesium is essential for the absorption of calcium. It also calms nerves, relieves muscle aches, and increases energy. Found in leafy greens, nuts, and whole grains. 5. Folate. One of the B vitamins, the name comes from the Latin word folium, meaning leaf. Folate enhances the body's metabolism and promotes cellular growth. Found in legumes, nuts, seeds, and soy products. 6. Potassium. Crucial to many bodily functions, potassium keeps your body's cells, tissues, and organs healthy. It also helps your body maintain a healthy blood pH level. Abundant in beans, dark leafy greens, potatoes, mushrooms, bananas, and many other plant foods. 7. Vitamin E. This vitamin's antioxidant properties promote health in your heart, skin, eyes, and brain, and may even reduce your cholesterol levels, among many other benefits. It is best ingested from grains, nuts, and dark leafy greens. 8. Phytochemicals. These chemical compounds occur in plants, phyto is the Greek word for plant, and protect them against such threats as insects and disease. Phytochemicals protect those who eat these plants as well by offering a vast range of benefits, including lowering the risk of chronic diseases. Each individual phytochemical offers its own advantages, and scientists have estimated that as many as 4,000 phytochemicals, if not more, exist. That's a lot of potential benefits. What could happen if we keep eating this way? By 2050, the world's population will reach nearly 9.8 billion, with almost all of this increase taking place in developing countries. Moreover, this will be coupled with the rise of urbanization as people migrate away from rural communities to cities in search of jobs and a better standard of living. As people's income levels rise, so will the demand for food. To meet the demands of almost 10 billion people, we'll need more food in the next 40 years than was needed in the past 10,000 years, which we can't achieve with our current farming systems unless we can create more water or land. The net result will be massive food shortages and a rise in global hunger rates. Food is obviously key to human survival, and with limited access to it, large sections of the global population will grow increasingly desperate and angry. This anger and desperation will most likely first begin to manifest itself in the form of protests, which will quickly escalate into violent riots. When food shortages struck Venezuela in 2016, violent riots quickly ensued. Within the span of 2 weeks, at least 50 outbursts occurred, leading to mass destruction and fatalities. People will raid shops, farms, and homes to access staple foods like grain and salt. Within months, these riots will spread from city to city and become more organized and increasingly violent, ultimately morphing into armed conflict between organized food militias and the government. Eventually, governments will be overthrown, violence and chaos will be the norm in urban areas, and the fight for food will extend beyond national borders and transform into global war. Millions of people will starve to death, and millions more will be killed, with countries invaded and entire populations wiped out as the battle for food is waged between nations employing the fullest extent of their military might. What could happen if we hashtag eat for the planet? The average American consumes roughly 1,892 pounds of grain a year, but in the form of meat. If everyone in the country stopped eating meat today, that would mean that all of this grain could be used to feed around 1.4 billion people on a plant-based diet. But remember, this is only if the 326 million people in the U.S. give up meat. As previously mentioned, if we could shift even just half of the world's grain production from feed purposes to human uses and convert available cropland accordingly, we could easily grow enough food sustainably to feed an additional 2 billion people. This, combined with a shift in global food distribution, could ensure that people in developing countries have access to food at prices they can afford. This change could have a profound impact on the problem of global hunger. It's not only the best chance we have at feeding a population of 9.8 billion by 2050, it's our only chance. Chapter 4. What the frack? Issues of energy and emissions. Greenhouse gas emissions associated with industrial animal agriculture are higher than any other industry. When it comes to being environmentally friendly, some of the ideas that have been drilled into our collective consciousness over the years include the following. We need to conserve energy at home. We need to recycle our trash. We need to reduce our reliance on gas-guzzling cars. While none of these ideas is inherently wrong, taken together, they don't paint an accurate picture of what's really sucking up our energy resources and wreaking havoc on global climate patterns. Let's take the last example, for instance. Hybrid and electric cars have become the new status symbols of the eco-minded populace. Heck, good luck trying to call yourself environmentally friendly while you cart yourself and your stuff around in a 7-seater SUV. You might as well slap on a custom license plate that says, hypocrite, because nearly everyone knows that gasoline and diesel are produced by refining crude oil, a non-renewable, finite resource. In addition, cars pollute the environment and release harmful greenhouse gas emissions that are leading to significant changes in the world's climate. Congrats! You get it. But if you are aware of the environmental impact of transportation, you want to take your environmentally friendly journey one further step. Here's a dirty little secret. The livestock system releases more greenhouse gases than all the world's transportation. That's all the automobiles, planes, trains, and ships combined. In fact, emissions generated during the production of a typical 8-ounce steak are equivalent to driving a small car for about 29 miles. Fossil fuels are powering our demise. If you have been paying attention to the issue of climate change, you probably already know a thing or two about fossil fuels, so called because these substances were formed in the past from the remains of once-living organisms, such as coal, oil, and natural gas. Fossil fuels power a vast majority of our modern conveniences. We take them from the ground and then burn them, which we have been doing since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. This process has led to the release of harmful greenhouse gases, which form thick blankets over the Earth, trapping heat and causing global temperatures to rise. Our overwhelming dependence on fossil fuels has led to more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere today than at any time in the past 600,000 years. At this rate, by the year 2100, scientists expect the Earth to be, on average, 4 degrees Celsius warmer than in pre-industrial times, which spells disaster for plants, animals, and humans alike. Producing meat and dairy is an oily business. From crop to table, it takes a lot of fossil fuels to power the production processes necessary to feed our appetite for animal protein. These processes include everything from feed, transportation, and the use of synthetic fertilizers and/or pesticides, to the staggering amount of energy it takes to power factory farms. Overall, the production of 1 calorie of animal protein requires about 10 times as much fossil fuel energy as is needed for 1 calorie of plant protein. This input can be higher depending on the type of meat produced. For example, grain-fed beef requires about 35 fossil fuel calories, amount of energy expended, for every 1 calorie produced. It all starts with the food we feed to livestock. Feed production accounts for around 50% of the fossil fuels used in livestock production. America's 20,000 factory farms use about 5.5 gallons of fossil fuels per acre. The average farm in the United States spans 1,296 acres, meaning it will devour about 7,128 gallons of fossil fuels. Burning 1 gallon of fossil fuels releases 19.6 pounds of CO2. Now consider the hundreds of millions more factory farms that are across the globe. In addition, we currently use an average of 180 million tons of synthetic, petroleum-based fertilizer to grow livestock feed. The biggest user of fossil fuel energy in industrial animal agriculture is for petrochemicals. Up to 40% of the energy used in the food system goes toward the production of artificial fertilizers and pesticides, which are derived from atmospheric nitrogen and natural gas. Their production and distribution takes an average of 5.5 gallons of fossil fuels per acre. As the Earth's population grows and the demand for meat increases, projections indicate that we'll need 230 million tons, or 7.3 billion gallons of fertilizer, just to produce feed crops by 2050. Machinery does the bulk of the heavy lifting in factory farms. Research from Cornell University indicates that the agriculture industry uses about 17% of fossil fuel energy in the U.S. Powering factory farm facilities accounts for a large part of this expenditure. Just think about the amount of energy required to keep a shed filled with over 20,000 chickens cool, or the mammoth heating bill necessary to keep 30,000 pigs warm in the middle of a Midwestern winter. Concentrated dairy operations require additional energy to power automated flushing systems that remove waste, dirt, and excess milk from the floor. Packaging and shipping meat, dairy, and eggs to grocery stores accounts for 23% of the energy used in our food production system. The majority of factory farms in the United States are located in the Midwest, meaning that meat often has to travel long distances to reach consumers. This requires massive temperature-controlled trucks, another energy drain. In comparison to energy needed to transport local food, non-local distribution uses 4 to 17 times more fuel. 5 ways to reduce your carbon footprint and save money. 1. Switch to energy-efficient lighting. By switching all of your light bulbs to energy-efficient LEDs or compact fluorescents, You can save money and help the environment. Just one energy-efficient bulb can save 1,300 pounds of CO2. And if every house in America switched to compact fluorescents, we could reduce the energy spent on lighting by 50%. 2. Unplug electronics. Even if their displays are off, electronics are still sipping power. Unplug your TV, cable box, computer, and other devices when you are not using them, and save $100 every year on your electric bill while helping the environment. 3. Drive smartly. Electric cars and hybrids are among the best ways to reduce your carbon footprint. According to the EPA, a plug-in hybrid can save 7,000 pounds of carbon dioxide, CO2, tailpipe emissions per year, compared to a 26-mile-per-gallon non-hybrid. That's equivalent to planting 79 trees. But you can still reduce your emissions without a hybrid. Instead of buying a gas-guzzling SUV, use an aerodynamic hitch-mounted cargo rack on your sedan. Inflating your tires properly can save up to 3% on gas. Of course, the smartest way to drive is to not drive at all. Use public transportation or carpool. 4. Insulate your home. Heating and cooling represent 50 to 70% of your energy costs. By properly insulating your walls and windows, you can drastically cut down on your energy usage while burning less fossil fuel. During winter, you can save an enormous amount of energy by opening your curtains during the day and closing them at night. 5. Avoid meat and dairy. The World Watch Institute estimates that 51% of greenhouse gas emissions are directly and indirectly caused by rearing animals for slaughter, from deforested lands to transportation costs to methane discharge. Methane, which is produced naturally by cows, is 23 times more potent than carbon dioxide. But by now, you've figured that one out. Care for a steak with a side of catastrophic greenhouse gas emissions? All this adds up to a whole lot of greenhouse gas emissions. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization estimates that livestock production is responsible for 14.5% of global human-created greenhouse gas emissions, while other organizations, such as the World Watch Institute, have estimated it could be as much as 51%. This number takes into account not only the fossil fuels used to produce and transport livestock before and after slaughter, but also the other gases that livestock produce on their own. In addition to releasing massive greenhouse gas emissions, the industrial livestock system is also leading to the decimation of our precious rainforests. The destruction of forests has ramifications far more wide-sweeping than just the loss of land. Remember the statistic mentioned earlier that 80% of the deforestation currently going on in the Amazon was attributed to beef production? The canopy of trees in the Amazon acts as a giant carbon store, trapping CO2 that the trees have absorbed from the atmosphere. When we chop down those trees to clear space for livestock, we not only release all of that stored CO2 back into the air, we remove valuable trees that would be helping to clean up the air and produce oxygen. Too much CO2 in the air traps gases and particulates in the atmosphere, contributing to climate change and pollution. It takes 9 trees 1 month to scrub 10 pounds of CO2 out of the atmosphere. Our current trends in food production alone will cause us to reach and possibly exceed the world's carbon budget. This budget, if maintained, gives us a good chance of keeping global warming below the scientific community's recommended 35 degrees Fahrenheit, 1.5 degrees Celsius, by 2050. 5 ways oil exploration in the Arctic harms whales. 1. Hearing loss. The seismic blast used in exploration can be loud enough to burst human eardrums. Whales are more sensitive to sounds, and these blasts can cause temporary or permanent hearing loss, highly dangerous for a creature whose daily activities rely on echolocation. 2. Freeze and sink response. Narwhals are particularly susceptible to seismic blasting because they are unlikely to flee an area when faced with a threat. Instead, they have been observed to respond to loud noises by freezing and sinking, which means the whales stay near the source of a seismic blast and suffer from additional impacts, such as hearing damage and stress. 3. Ice entrapment. Scientists have observed that narwhal migration is disrupted by seismic blasting noise,